Today is the first day of class, January 9th, 2017. We're going to be working on endocrine system today. That link is on the top of D2L as well.
Yeah.
Okay, so I know that you probably came through 210 at some point. Some of you came through it last fall semester. For some others, it may have been some time ago. So I kind of want to do a memory jogger as to where you came from. When you learned about the nervous system, we know that nerves or neurons communicate with each other through chemical synapses. So what is the name of the chemical that's released by axon terminals at one end of a nerve?
ACH.
ACH, good. Acetylcholine, you're right. So that is a neurotransmitter. And what is the job of that neurotransmitter? Good. It has a message. It tells the next cell across the synapse, my message is for you to promote a muscle contraction. So we know that neurotransmitters carry messages across a synapse, and the messages may include muscle contraction, or maybe it might be muscle relaxation. Well, when we talk about the endocrine system, we're talking about a similar setup, except we no longer require the use of a synapse or neurons. This time, we're talking about chemical messengers called hormones, and these hormones are going to travel through a much slower pathway. How is it that these hormones get to their target areas?
Glands.
Good. Glands release them. Good. And those glands release hormones into the bloodstream. So the bloodstream is a much slower pathway to getting you to your destination. That's why we think of your endocrine system as a much slower system, while your nervous system tends to be a much faster system. So why do you think the nervous system is faster? It's electrical impulses, right. So neurotransmitters in the nervous system travel over a nervous pathway that involves electrical impulses and chemical synapses. By contrast, the endocrine system uses hormones that are dumped into your bloodstream. So imagine this. Imagine putting a bottle out here in the Pee River and letting it travel down to the beach. And that's your message. Your message says, hey, I'm ready to go. Come pick me up. What, a week later it may get down there? A week later your ride may come for you? Boy, that's not a very fast way to get the job done, is it? So the point here is, with your endocrine system, we do not typically expect quick results. We expect results over weeks, months, or years. So let me give you an example of how this works. When you were born, most babies are about 20 inches long. How many years does it take to get to this height?
15 or more?
Yeah, it takes sometimes 12, 15, 18, maybe even 21 years to get to your final height. That is a great example of endocrine. We're not expecting fast results. We expect results, but they can be over weeks, months, or years. So that's where this endocrine system comes into play. Can you give me an example of where you may want quick results? The endocrine may not be suitable. Muscles, good, yeah. If you're standing on a railroad track and the horn's blaring at you, you have a few seconds to move, right? You can't wait weeks, months, or years for your endocrine system to move you. You've got to have immediate action through nerve impulses. So there is a time and a place where you want a quick response through the nervous system, and of course there's a time and a place for a slow, leisurely response that comes through the endocrine system. Okay, so speed here is an issue with these two systems. By the way, if you've got blanks here on your sheet, the system that is faster, of course, is the nervous system. And the slower system is your endocrine system. Which of these two systems employs hormones? Endocrine, good. So how do hormones get to their target or destination? Bloodstream, good. Do neurotransmitters necessarily need the bloodstream?
No.
No, they just travel across the synapse to the neighboring cell. So there's a couple of differences right off the bat we can see between endocrine and nervous systems. Okay. So what are we looking at here? Neurotransmitters, good. How do you know?
Because
that's a synapse. That is a synapse, good. And if this chemical travels from the axon terminal of one cell to a target, which is your neighboring cell, this has to be what kind of chemical? Yeah, some type of neurotransmitter like acetylcholine, right? Because it can't be a hormone, because how do hormones travel?
Bloodstream.
Bloodstream, exactly. Good. Okay, so let's talk about endocrine glands. First of all, you notice the prefix endo means what?
Within.
Good. What does exo tell us? Okay, so sweat glands, oil glands, tear glands all pump secretions onto the external surface of your body. Of course, exo meaning outside, that's the destination for those secretions. Endocrine glands release their secretions into what?
Bloodstream.
Bloodstream. Good, good. And of course, that can take a minimal of a minute to travel around your body, and the effects typically aren't expected immediately. We're looking at more long-term effects when we're talking about endocrine gland secretions. So this is the thyroid here on the right. You'll notice there are no tubes here. On the left, you've got a sweat gland, and you have a duct or a tube that carries the secretion. So it's a simple fact of how we get the target, whether it's sweat or thyroid hormones, out into where it needs to go. We don't need duct work when we're talking endocrine because we have the bloodstream to carry off these hormones. So these hormones simply get dumped in the bloodstream and they're diffused throughout our blood and the body. Okay, so some examples of endocrine glands. Let's start from the head and go down. What are some of the endocrine glands in your brain? Pineal, good. Pituitary is another really big one. Okay. On your worksheet, let's see, letter A would be your pineal gland. Letter A would be pineal gland. Letter B would be anterior pituitary. Oh, I'm sorry, you're right. C is anterior pituitary. So what is B?
Posterior,
good. So B is posterior pituitary, C is anterior pituitary. Okay, be careful with D and E. What is D? Thyroid is D. E sits in the chest. It is
thymus,
right. Thymus, yeah. Okay, letter F are adrenal glands. How about G?
Pancreas,
good. Okay, and letter H? Ovaries. And I? Testes, good. So that is not a complete list of endocrine glands. Your heart is actually an endocrine gland. So is your stomach and your intestines. But in terms of endocrine function, we consider those our major endocrine glands. Okay, so there's other things out there that can be endocrine, of course. How about questions on page 3? All right, on the top of page 4, let's talk about the word hormone. So hormones are chemical messengers. It is their job to communicate a message to some other target elsewhere in the body. How do hormones get to their target organs?
Bloodstream.
Bloodstream, good. Okay, so I want to take you back to Bayer 210, which is going to be something you hear all the time in here, is taking a trip back to Bayer 210. But I want to review plasma membrane structure with you for just a moment. You probably learned about integral proteins, peripheral proteins, double layers of phospholipids, and then out here on the outer surface we had a sticky area called the glycocalyx. That glycocalyx has a bunch of stuff sticking off the surface. A couple of these things out here are carb chains, glycoproteins. Some of these serve as receptors for chemicals that are passing through. So what we're thinking about here is certain cells have receptors on the outer surface that say, hey hormone, I'm your target, come talk to me. And so if you have a receptor out there, the hormone may stop at your cell and have a conversation. If there's no receptor, what does the hormone do? Keeps on trucking, right? It continues to drift on by. It doesn't stop at your cell. There's no business communications to be had with your cell. And it continues on looking for those that have a receptor sticking out from the surface that says, hey, hey, I'm the one you want to talk to right here. So this is how hormones communicate with their target areas. They look for cells that have particular receptors sitting on them. Sometimes the receptor is outside, sticking up like a flag, and then sometimes the receptors are actually inside the cell. And it depends on what kind of hormone you've got as to where the receptor may be sitting. So let's talk about hormone classifications. Hormones fall into two categories. They're either considered to be amino acid-based, which we know are proteins, or they're considered to be steroid-based, which we know to be lipids. Let's go back to the plasma membrane for just a moment. When you learned about the plasma membrane, one of the big things we push is the structure of the membrane. There's two layers of phospholipids here. Do you know anything special about the heads and the tails? Good. So which portion is hydrophilic? The heads, meaning they love water, and the tails are hydrophobic, meaning they hate water. Okay, so we know water's an issue here. What about fat molecules? Can fats cross through the phospholipids? Yes, fats can come across the phospholipids because they are like the phospholipids in terms of construction. So even though water molecules can't pass directly through the phospholipid bilayer, fat molecules can. Hold that thought and look at our list. Which class of hormone can pass through? There you go, steroids. So steroids are a lipid or a fat-based hormone, and because they are like the phospholipid bilayer, they can travel right across and into the interior of the cell. Okay, now proteins are a different story. You know, proteins can become rather big, and unfortunately, their size prevents them from entering the cell. So proteins are never going to be able to enter the cell with one exception, and that's thyroid hormone. Okay, so thyroid hormone is an exception to the rule. It is a protein, but it's one of the few that can actually go right through the plasma membrane into the interior. Otherwise, proteins are too big, and they're left on the outside of the cell. They're not going to be able to pass through. They're too large. And that's thyroid hormone. That's right. So I'd like to talk you through the two methods that hormones use to talk to their target cells. We know that there's two classifications. We know there are steroid or lipid-based hormones, and we know that there are protein or amino acid-based hormones. Which one of those two can pass directly through your phospholipid bilayer? Good. Steroids, and they use direct gene activation. Did you catch my key word?
Pass right through.
Yeah. So direct gene activation is how steroids get inside the cell. Excuse me. They pass directly through that phospholipid bilayer, and then they talk to the cell's interior. So we're going to talk through that one in just a moment. We also have secondary messenger. Excuse me, which is how proteins communicate with their target cells. Okay, so let's take secondary messenger system first. This is the method used by most protein-based hormones. Because most protein-based hormones are too big, where do you think we find their receptors? Inside the cell or outside the cell?
Outside,
yeah. So these proteins cannot pass into the interior of the cell. They're just too big. So they have to find their receptor on the outside of the cell. And that's exactly what we see here. So this is epinephrine. You may have heard of this one before, right? Adrenaline, okay? And let's say that this is a heart muscle cell. What do you think the message is for the heart muscle?
Speed up,
yeah. Beat faster, right? Okay, so when epinephrine has bound its receptor on the outside of the plasma membrane, it turns on all this chemical machinery inside the cell. We make G proteins, we turn on a second messenger called CAMP. That's the important portion. The hormone is the first messenger, and CAMP is our second messenger. And so what message do you think CAMP tells the cell? Speed it up, right. So the hormone says to the receptor, I have a message for you. It is to speed up your activities. By docking with that receptor, it turns on CAMP, and CAMP says, hey, I'll do the dirty work for you. I'm inside the cell, so I'm going to carry out the job. And so CAMP turns on an enzyme called protein kinase. How did you know it was an enzyme?
ACE.
Okay. So yeah, enzymes we know help to speed up chemical reactions. Yeah, so there we go. We're going to make this cell's activities increase. And that's what the goal of epinephrine was to increase the activities of this cell. So the catch is, the protein cannot enter this cell. Why not?
Too big.
Good. So it sends message by way of a second messenger. What is the name of your second messenger? CAMP. Good. You know what? That stands for cyclic AMP. Or we can just call it CAMP for short. Okay. I wanted you to notice, though, AMP sounds a lot like ATP. What is ATP? Good. And it's energy, right? Okay, so it's just a lower-level energy form. Instead of being triphosphate, it's monophosphate. So nonetheless, AMP is an energy molecule, very low-level, but its job is to be a messenger. That is the second messenger in this secondary messenger system. Okay, let's break it. What if you have no receptor? Can this whole mechanism run? You shut it off, right? There are drugs called blockers, beta blockers, for instance. We'll go up here, they'll put a plug in that receptor site, and they say, epinephrine, you're not coming to this cell. Closed. We're not talking to you. And so epinephrine has to drift along to another cell and look for another receptor. So if you block the receptor, can you turn on the second messenger? So what happens to the cell's activities? There's no activity, right? So it just keeps on trucking, like whatever it was doing, it just maintains doing its regular thing. So that's how certain drugs work, is by blocking those receptor sites and preventing those hormones from having a communication. So yeah, beta blockers are one class of chemicals that actually do that job. Okay, let's do another one. Let's do steroid hormones. They use a mechanism called direct gene activation. This, by the way, is over on the top of page 5. So this time, where's the receptor?
Inside the cell.
Inside the cell, yeah. It's not outside. These steroids are lipids, and we know lipids come right on through the phospholipid bilayer, and they find their receptor inside the nucleus. In fact, the receptor and the hormone bind. They come over here and they activate transcription, and that's where we get the name direct gene activation. We directly activate a gene, we turn on transcription, we then run translation. Guess what we're making?
DNA.
Transcription and translation? Protein synthesis. Okay, so yeah, we're making proteins by activating a specific region of your DNA. We do transcription. Here is translation, and there's your new protein. I know you knew before you stepped foot in this classroom that taking testosterone builds muscle, right? Okay? Testosterone is a steroid, and this is how it does it. It comes into cells. If there's a receptor sitting there, it binds the receptor, turns on protein synthesis, which in fact may build more muscle. So that's how most of our steroids work, is by turning on some kind of protein synthesis operation. Okay. So a couple of things to notice here. With your steroids, we're turning on a receptor. Where does that receptor sit? Inside your cell, right? Compare that to secondary messenger. Good, outside your cell, good. Which one of these mechanisms uses TAMP? Secondary messenger, good. Does secondary messenger activate protein synthesis? No, that is the job of direct gene activation. Good. Okay, let me give you an analogy. If you have an elephant ring your doorbell, you may look out and say, oh my gosh, there's an elephant at my front door. Do you open the door and let him in? So is he a steroid hormone or protein hormone?
Protein,
good. If you go back in the house and get him some peanuts, who are you acting as? You're acting as a secondary messenger, good. So why didn't you let the elephant in?
Too big.
Too big, good. And by ringing your doorbell, what did the elephant do?
Let you know he's there.
Let you know he's there. So what did he bind? The receptor, good. And by you getting the peanuts inside the house, you behaved as second messenger, which is
camp.
Good, good. Okay, and then let's talk about another one. Let's say that you live next door to a cousin, somebody you've known since you were born. You're like the closest of close, and you need to borrow a cup of sugar. Do you ring the doorbell?
No.
Do you go in the house? You're going in the kitchen, right? You get yourself that cup of sugar, and there you run into somebody and you say, hey, I'm just borrowing a cup of sugar. I'm not bringing it back, right? Okay, so you go on in the house and you actually encounter somebody in the nucleus of the house, which is the kitchen. And of course, that's the first time you actually talk to somebody, okay? And so when you talk to somebody in the nucleus of the house, you're binding the genes there. So you're actually talking to the receptor on those genes. Now, in terms of this process, what is the goal?
Bake a cake.
Yeah, bake a cake, right? Or in a cell, what do we hope to make?
Proteins.
So you make proteins as a result of steroid hormones. Do you make proteins as a result of protein hormones? Oddly enough, no. Okay, did you catch that? Okay, steroid hormones turn on protein synthesis, but proteins don't. Proteins don't make proteins. Isn't that weird? Okay, did you catch that? Okay, so interesting how different proteins have different outcomes. They have different ways of communicating with their cells, but we always have to have a receptor for that communication to take place. No receptor, and there's no communication. Okay, so the receptor is the key to having this conversation. Let's say you wanted to block testosterone. Where should I place a blocker for the receptor? Inside the cell, right. Right, inside the cell. So in fact, inside that nucleus. Okay, if I want to block a protein-based hormone, where should I place my blocker? Outside, yeah, on that plasma membrane. Okay. So what is the exception? There is one protein that does not play by the rules. It's actually a protein, but it works by direct gene activation. Thyroid hormone, exactly. Okay, so one exception to the rule there. How about questions so far? Does this stuff make sense? That's correct. Well, if you had a blocker, you'd put the blocker against the receptor inside, and that way when the steroid came in, it couldn't hook up with its receptor. Does that make sense? Yeah, it's going to come on in anyway. And then when it can't find its receptor, it's like, well, you know, heck, I'll just leave, or it just may stay in there. But it has nowhere to bind. Yeah. Okay. Sure. How about other questions on this stuff? Okay. Let's see. About halfway down page 5, there's 3 terms there. Let's talk about those. These are hormone interaction terms. At the very top of your page, that's 5. Letter A's blank is intracellular. Intracellular. Yeah, for the on page 5 at the very top is a blank for A. It's intracellular. Intracellular receptor. That's what the steroid binds. So in the middle of the page there's 3 terms that describe hormone interactions. One of them is permissiveness. And if you want to go to the movies and you're 8 years old, you probably ask someone's permission. They say sure, they take you, they maybe even sit with you through the movies. That's what hormones do with permissiveness. One hormone has to give permission for another hormone to do its job. One great example of this is thyroid hormone. Thyroid is permissive for a lot of different hormones. In fact, sex hormones rely on thyroid for permission. So sometimes women who want to get pregnant complain to their doctor of their problems getting pregnant, and instead of giving them some kind of sex hormone, they're prescribed thyroid hormone. And so that may be confusing because you think, well, I don't have a thyroid problem, but in fact, thyroid gives permission for the sex hormones to do their job. So then that may help a woman get pregnant because it was the permissiveness that was not occurring. I'm sure you've heard of the term synergist and antagonist from Bio-210. What do synergists do? Work together. Good. And antagonist?
Against.
Good. So that is not the last time we'll talk about those terms. We'll talk about them periodically throughout this chapter. bottom of the page, let's make that our last topic for the day. These are ways that hormones communicate with their target organs. Okay, so we're laying the foundation for what's to come on Wednesday. If you have a hormone released from the pituitary gland, and it travels to your thyroid gland, it says, hey, thyroid gland, I want you to make and release thyroid hormones. This is an example of hormonal stimulation. One hormone from one gland tells another gland to make and release its hormone. So I kind of think of it like passing the buck. The pituitary gland passes the buck to the thyroid gland, telling it to make and release thyroid hormone. This is a very common mechanism. It's our bottom one listed here. Very common way for us to have hormones released from other glands through this hormonal pathway. Now let's compare that to humoral, which is our first one. They sound very similar, but they in fact operate very differently. I want you to notice the first portion of that word, humoral. It sounds like humor. It's not funny at all, but in fact a very old term for our bodily fluids. You know, back several hundred years ago, they called our blood part of the humors. Bile was a humor, for instance. And you may know that they bled people who were sick for practically any reason. You've got a cold, let's bleed you. You've got a headache, let's bleed you. Those were the humors. They thought you had bad humors in your body, and by bleeding, they could get rid of the bad humors. Oh my gosh, how backwards, right? We know better nowadays. So the humors are the blood, the fluids, things of that sort. But that's our key word. We're looking at ion or nutrient concentrations in the bloodstream. All right, so that's things like blood glucose levels, blood calcium levels, blood sodium, blood potassium. If we talk about blood concentration of any ion or nutrient, then we're thinking about humoral concentration. Let me give you an example. If you have high blood sugar levels, what hormone lowers them for us?
Insulin.
Good. You may have heard of parathyroid hormone, calcitonin, epinephrine. All of those can respond to blood ion or blood nutrient levels. Okay, and that's different from this system of hormonal control. One hormone from one gland telling another what to do. Now the final type of stimulation comes from our nerves. If I say to you, okay, close your notes and books, we're going to have a pop quiz on what we've covered today. What did I just do to your nervous system? I put you in sympathetic mode, right? What neurotransmitters work for the sympathetic nervous system?
Epinephrine
and norepinephrine, and those can travel in the bloodstream, and when they hop in the bloodstream, we now call them hormones. And so the nervous system can actually stimulate the release of certain chemicals that can behave as both neurotransmitters and, oddly enough, as hormones too. So probably the two we're going to spend the most time on are hormonal and humoral. And I'll start Wednesday by going back over those with more examples. Okay? So if you don't have a course pack, that is the bottom of page 5. And we're going to start with the page 6 on Wednesday. What kind of questions do y'all have for today? Okay, I'll see you on Wednesday then. Looking forward to having you this semester.